there's a reason that gold and silver have started to boom, and you won't find that reason in price charts or prediction headlines. The answer is actually in how people are feeling about their money. Confidence has been wobbling thanks to higher cost of living, uncertain politics here and around the world, governments making decisions that leave you asking, what next? And when that happens, people don't just talk about it, they move. And particularly, they move their money. Enter Darcy Ungaro, who gets a front row seat to all of this.
During times of global instability, especially when there is some flavor of financial instability or change, we'll often see these types of alternative forms of money do well.
Darcy is a financial advisor and the host of the New Zealand Everyday Investor. This means he keeps an eye on not only what is happening, but has some of the most honest conversations with clients about why they're doing it.
A lot of everyday people are a lot smarter than they used to be. And so they know now when they're being sold snake oil. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no way, I'm not going to do that. I want to take control of this. Part of me really doesn't want people to lose trust in institutions, especially financial institutions, because that's actually what keeps the money world going is trust.
But if you're wanting to step outside the mainstream, well, buyer beware, because sometimes there's a reason that certain investments aren't the standard choice. So between crypto and silver, silver's more.
It's a very, very volatile investment. Probably one of the most volatile investments that exist in my portfolio. And I hold a good amount of Bitcoin as well.
So welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. And it's time to dive into the world of precious metals to find out pros, cons, and what's actually going on. Welcome to the pod. God, is this the first time on this podcast? Because you were on my other one quite a bit.
I was on the other one. And I think it's the first time that we've actually met since, like physically been in the same room since like way back in 2017, I think. We met each other. But yeah, so everything has been virtual since then. So that's good to see you again.
Thank God for the internet age that we can stay in touch and share financial theories and harass each other online.
Yeah, that's good. It's good fun.
Look, you are my favorite person to talk to when I need to talk about some of the wilder sides of the money world. But I also need someone who's legitimate and not going to sell us some snake oil. So thank you very much.
Just on the edge, but not over the edge. Thank you,
yes,
Frances.
That's good. A great way to put it. Yeah. And I have seen so many comments recently, a lot of people in my comments, a lot of people just writing about it generally, about these rise in alternative investments, particularly the precious metals, the gold, the silver. Crypto, still getting a lot of chat, even though the price is kind of all over the place. But it feels like there's a real boom in this recently. And of course, you deal with clients all the time as well. You're not just talking about the stuff, you're dealing with clients. Are you seeing an increase in interest in this stuff from people who are actually moving their money? Are people actually putting their money where their mouth is on this?
Yes. Really simply put, probably over the last 18 to 24 months in particular, it's been quite an obvious shift in how things have worked. Personally, I've been allocating towards these types of investments because of my longer term thesis. But it's been quite weird just seeing over the last 18 to 24 months that there's been a rise in other people that have been asking me about it rather than the other way around, where I've been very sheepishly recommending that people learn about it. People have been kind of now demanding it. So it's been quite a noticeable shift.
I've got my theories on why this is happening, but I want to know yours. When you're talking to people, what do you know? Like, what's coming up in conversation? What do you think is driving that shift?
I think in one word, it would be polycrisis. So it's this almost like a fatigue setting in that there's just one thing after another. And it's really hard to say whether or not this is, it's real, it's legitimate. There really is more stuff going on, or we're just more aware of it because of social media and the speed at which information is moving around. But it feels like there is a loss of trust that is occurring in institutions everywhere, but specifically financial institutions. And I think a natural response to things when you feel like you can't trust a third party is to grab that treasure and put it back on your lap, right? Like, if you're not going to trust somebody, you might as well not trust yourself rather than somebody else and pay a fee for it.
I would rather mess it up for me.
Exactly, right?
Then be like, oh, I've got this great person. They're going to do everything for, oh no, they mess it up too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think some of it's got something to do with just, again, how fast information is flowing around, because maybe 5 years ago or so, there was still a separation between those who knew a lot of stuff and those who were trying to learn, but there was a gap. But with podcasts, with YouTube, everything is now out there. And I think a lot of everyday people are a lot smarter than they used to be. And so they know now when they're being sold snake oil. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no way, I'm not going to do that. I want to take control of this because I know that you don't know either. And if someone's not going to know and I can't trust them, I might as well not know myself and not trust myself either. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, well, okay. So you've picked up on there exactly what my theory is too. This loss of trust. And I think we're seeing this loss of trust in many different areas. I think we're also seeing it towards some of political institutions, and kind of fair enough in a lot of ways, but that's a story for a different podcast. But, you know, in terms of the financial institutions, I'm definitely seeing that as a theme, both in the wider commentary and the messages people send me, that people are worried, maybe feeling a bit disenchanted, a bit unsure about things, and certainly very unstable. And so we have this flight to alternative assets, and then also ones that are seen as safe havens. And we can dig into whether or not that's true as we go through this conversation. But what do you think in terms of the loss of trust? Do you think that that's valid?
Part of me doesn't want this to be true. Like, part of me really doesn't want people to lose trust in institutions, especially financial institutions, because that's actually what keeps the money world going is trust. Institutions haven't done themselves any favors by having that degree of hubris and actually being quite arrogant around what position they're in. But sadly, I see a world coming, I think, where people are going to be less trusting, and therefore things start to break down, cohesion starts to break down really quickly. And as it relates to financial decisions, it doesn't necessarily lead to the very best financial decisions, because quite often, sadly, it taps into fear, which in some cases stands for false evidence appearing real. And people get sucked into fear, they get doom scrolling, doom porn, and it doesn't end up leading to good financial outcomes and good decisions. It's not necessarily true that the world has changed recently. Yes, it has, but it's always been changing. It's partially true that you've just noticed it changing a lot more. Some of that loss of trust isn't warranted, but a lot of it is, but it's well overdue as well. So we're kind of just catching up, I think, with reality.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I have a real thing against, as someone who puts out a lot of content, I work really hard to make sure I don't feed into doomerism, because I know that negative content does well. I know I can hit those scary switches and it'll probably go hard on social media. And yet that would make me feel terrible about what I'm putting out to the world. I don't think that's making the world a better place. But there is a lot of doomerism out there, and it does perform well, and it's really hard. At the same time, I do think there are very real reasons to be upset about things. You've just got to find that balance, don't you? So when people are thinking about it in terms of their money, I think there's often a balance of, like, I understand why people are seeking out these alternative assets, and then balancing that with what's the smart response when you're trying to imagine your overall money strategy. What goes, okay, it's all looking a bit wonky out there. It's all a bit crazy. I mean, just this morning as I was prepping, looking at the headlines as we go to talk, we're recording this 1 week before it goes out, and I'm trying to get it out there as fast as we can, because I'm like, by the time this goes out, even 1 week is forever in money land these days. So as of this morning, gold and silver are up even more because there's been all of these potential tariff announcements, there's tensions ratcheting up between Trump and Europe, and the stock market is down. All of that is real. But how do you balance looking at these things and going, okay, maybe I take a slightly different strategy, but you're trying not to knee-jerk react either, because that's not smart either.
And chances are, the more dispersed this narrative is, which supports precious metals specifically, the more late we are in the opportunity as well. Because it always starts small with contrarians at the core who've spotted something that not many other people have seen. They're onto something, but they sound crazy. Everyone dismisses them. And then everybody else comes on board. And usually, not always, but usually that's at the tail end of what the opportunity actually is. But just going back to what you're saying before, you know, you might have kids, you have a business, you have friends, you've got good things going on in your life, and then you have bad things going on or challenges that you might be going through as well. And when you go to those different headspaces in your mind, it invokes different feelings and different, you have different responses that come up as a result of going to those different mental spaces. And I kind of think of that as a way of visualizing my own portfolio. And that's kind of what I like to encourage other people to do as well, where you don't have to be an extremist to understand these extreme points of view. But if you think about things like the U.S., emerging markets, precious metals and whatever, energy, just pick your asset class, it doesn't matter. You should think extremist views around that. And you should get into the proper narrative that accompanies why you are investing into that, as if it's the only thing that exists. So I'm going to invest in the U.S. market because it's stable. That's where growth comes from. I'm going to invest in emerging markets because there's shifting global centers of power and that's where the opportunity is. I'm going to invest in precious metals because of what you were just saying before, the world feels like a scary place. These are all competing narratives that are sometimes contradictory, and we struggle with that because we're often investing according to like what I would call a wishful thinking bias, where we want the world to go a certain way and we're almost fighting the way the world is actually going. And we allocate according to a wishful thinking lens, when in reality, we should be accepting the world that exists. And that does require holding these really awkward, horrible, sometimes dark worldviews, because you have to do that. Otherwise, you're not actually in it for the right reasons. And when it's tested, it'll fall over. So you have to have that real strong conviction, no matter what your portfolio looks like. But just like going back to your life, you have different mental places that you go to. With your portfolio, different mental headspaces that you go to. And it doesn't mean that you believe the world is coming to an abrupt end. It just means that for that portion of your portfolio, you believe it is.
Right. Okay. So let me see if I've got this right in terms of, you know, as you say, comparing it to your life. You might have your friends you go out and you have a lot of fun with, or, you know, you come back and you're with your kids and you're a little bit more responsible and you're making sure that food is on the table at dinner time and everyone's ready to go. And you go to work and you're, again, you're still yourself, but you're like a different version of yourself in these different places. So if you're thinking about that in terms of your money, then you might say, okay, yet again, some bad headlines this morning. It's looking all a bit unstable. I do believe there is instability in the world, so I'm going to pursue some safe haven assets because there's some instability. I do also believe that at some point, growth is going to come back. So I'm going to put this amount into the share market. That's a long-term play. Is that what we're sort of talking about?
100%. Because that's how we operate in regular life. So why should we be any different when we look at our portfolio? So you allocate your time according to what's important to you, according to what you feel will give you the best return for your time, whether it's spending time with your kid, your partner, your job, whatever it is. So with your portfolio, it should be, well, this is my weighting that I'm going to put in the U.S. markets, because over the investment time frame that I'm planning for, which is 25 years, I want to make sure that I'm putting the components in there that I know will be successful within that time frame. It's one of the themes, I guess, that I've been exploring in my podcast right from the very start. And it's been frustrating to see this, but it's human nature. We fall into these silos where we just think that our asset class defines us, right? I'm a property guy. I'm a financial independence, retire early guy.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, a precious metals guy, whatever. You don't have to be defined by what you're investing in, but it should reflect what's inside your head. To a certain degree, in my view.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, so if we start with silver, because I've been getting a lot of questions about that one. I mean, silver's interesting, right? Because I mean, gold gets a lot of attention, a lot of chat, and yet all of a sudden I have seen a real spike of interest in silver, which I think is, but to my mind, flown a little under the radar until now. So what do you think has driven the interest in silver, and what are sort of its defining points as an investment?
It's hard to talk about silver without talking about gold, which is kind of like the older brother or the cousin, the more stable one, I guess you could say. Gold and silver have been used as forms of money for well over 5,000 years. And we have seen, well, in my investment time frame, I've seen one very significant bull run in silver, which was in, I think it was in 2011. And it comes up every now and then. It's not like it's new. It's a new asset class. It's been around, like I say, for thousands of years. But during times of global instability, especially when there is some flavor of financial instability or change that accompanies it, we'll often see these types of alternative forms of money do well. And I think one of the reasons why, especially when there's more war that's happening within the world, is that quite often in the past, times of military conflict have often coincided with times of global financial resets. And it wouldn't be hard to believe that right now we're seeing a lot of the precursor events that will eventually result in a currency reset of some sort. The investment thesis that I've had for a very long time has been, and it's much more defined now, but right at the very start, it was my belief that the US dollar would not be the global reserve currency in the future. I started to think, well, if that was the case, how does that affect other global currencies? What would be a rational strategy? The first iteration of that was buying investment properties, borrowing to do that because the value of our dollar goes down. And I was using property as alternative stores of wealth. These days, it's a lot more common for people to understand that there's more ways to express that trade, broadly known as the debasement trade, by owning precious metals and other forms of scarcity, which could include alternative assets, classic wine, whiskey, cars, planes, whatever, and then Bitcoin out of all the crypto.
I hadn't caught planes in there before.
Yeah. I had a client recently in the South Island who was into classic planes, and they bought World War
II. As an investment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was quite fascinating.
It's so rare now that I get something that's truly new. I've not come across the planes
I've seen
thing
some
before.
Strange things, yeah, as in investments. Yeah, there's
I
a niche for
that.
Everything. I haven't seen anybody like really make it big in stamp collecting, but maybe that's a thing as well still. I don't know if there's a word for it. I can't remember what it is, but.
So when we're seeing the price go up, like again this morning it has, do you think that's going to continue or a blip or, you know, what's your gut feeling?
Yes, though, to answer your question, we are likely, in my view, to see the value of silver continue to spike upwards. However, it's not going to be a straight line. And my view, and I guess my concern as well for those that are especially thinking about getting into it for the first time, is that the volatility will be quite upsetting and unsettling for a lot of people because we've seen drawdowns or corrections in the price of precious metals between 70 to 80% in the last two silver bull runs on the way to reaching all-time highs. And so for those that are kind of getting into it, they're speculating, they want number go up. Great, I'm going to put some money into silver, watch it go. There's a good chance they'll trade it. That's what I did. That was one of my mistakes that I made early on. And they'll lose and they'll get burnt by it. It's a very, very volatile investment. Probably one of the most volatile investments that exist in my portfolio. And I hold a good amount of Bitcoin as well.
I was just going to say, you're a crypto guy.
Yeah, it is one of the more volatile ones that I have to have respect for.
So between crypto and silver, silver's more?
Well, between Bitcoin and silver, yes. I always separate Bitcoin and crypto because crypto is basically something else in my view. Yeah.
We'll come back to that point because that's a very interesting point. But I want to touch on, because you've been saying this very diplomatically so far, but I like to dip in and out of
your content. You're looking for some spice, aren't you, Francis?
Yeah, okay. The spice. Because you said in some of your content that silver can rip your face off.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was glorious. And yeah, it can. But explain that comment to me more because that's descriptive.
It is, yeah. And so, like, I guess the analogy would come from going on a roller coaster ride, right? Where, yeah, sometimes your face will go up as you go down and sometimes it goes down as you go up. And then when you get older, it just stays down. But it is very, very volatile. And I worry about that. But I also think that volatility has been painted as an evil over time.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in the finance industry, especially in the regulatory industry, and it is an industry, have done a lot of the damage themselves by confusing risk and volatility together. Risk is the probability of absolute financial loss. Volatility is the change in price. Silver will go through a change in price quite significantly, but it will not, it cannot go to zero because it is a form of money and that makes it completely different. But a lot of people don't understand that. They'll go in it thinking, well, how much money can I make? How much fiat currency? How much New Zealand dollars can I make? By holding this, by buying it low and selling it high. In my view, that isn't the smartest way to play silver. I think a smarter way to play silver is to allocate to it thoughtfully for a long period of time and engage in periodic rebalancing rather than trading. And what that means is that, for example, for me, my original portfolio allocation to silver was 5%. Now it's close to like 15% because it's just
shot up in price.
Gone insane.
Yeah.
It's way too much. I will be rebalancing. I will be selling off a little bit soon, so to bring it closer, not entirely back to 5%, but closer to 5%. And so that's more of a systematic response to the volatility rather than a knee-jerk emotional response. And I don't want to look down on anyone who does this. It's really easy to have an emotional response to volatility. I've done it myself in the past. It's absolutely understandable, and I'll probably do it again in the future. But that's what I worry about, is that people will eventually lose a lot of faces. Like they will go through so much stress and strain by trying to play the game rather than trying to allocate to it thoughtfully that they'll lose. So that's like, I guess, my biggest warning out there is that if you want to get involved in this space, do it with a strategy. Don't do it with the point of view that you just want to make a lot of money.
Yeah, I really like that strategy just in general for your money, of the percentages, because I think the thing with money is we all sort of understand you're supposed to buy low, sell high. And if we were good at that, we'd all be a lot richer. Really easy to say, so hard to do, because it's when you see the price going up, when you see big headlines of silver is booming, is when you're thinking, ooh, should I get in on that? Well, by definition, the price is high. By definition, that's potentially a time to be thinking about selling, but you're not going to want to. That's when there's hype. That's when there's attention. That's when everyone's saying, ooh, is it going to go even further? And so by saying, okay, the amount, the value of silver that I hold has now boomed out, so now it's time to sell to bring it back to the proper percentage, kind of enforces that discipline to make you sell it when the price is high, when you're not going to want to, are you?
Exactly. Yeah. And like you say, easy to say.
Yeah.
Pretty hard to do, right? And I think that there's ways that you can create behavioral hacks, in my view, to ensure that you follow that. The way that I respond to that volatility is to allocate to the physical metal, like hold coins and bars specifically. The other way that I do it is I hold it through my KiwiSaver plan, and then I hold some ETFs that are silver-backed ETFs. And one I use for rebalancing, which is the ETF, so that's what I will be selling down. The physical, I hold that primarily, well, for a couple of reasons. One would be to hedge against like the worst case scenario, which is like zombie apocalypse, where we really are using precious metals as a form of currency again, because the internet's down, you can't spend your money, it's World War IV, whatever. But the problem with physical is that, yeah, there's security. Like when I started out, I held my precious metals in a safe. As soon as I started talking about it on my podcast, got it out of that safe right away.
Yep.
Because it is way harder to go and get that precious metal, physical precious metal, out of the safe, go on TradeMe or wherever on a Facebook group and sell it, go to your gold dealer and sell it, than it is to flick off an ETF. Yeah. And so that helps me to have a portion of my portfolio, which is a genuine buy and hold long term. That's my physical. And then potentially, I don't use it for trading. I use it for balancing, and there's a big difference. I have a portion which is on ETFs and within my KiwiSaver that I can rebalance as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, that there are different ways to invest in precious metals in general. I did a episode months ago now on gold, but for anyone who's listening, then you can go back in the archives and I talk about the different, you know, ETF gold versus physical gold. And
miners, yeah. I saw that. It was good.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And as you say, though, the security. If you do hold it physically, don't tell anyone. Please don't get robbed. And there are places where you can store it properly, safely, not in your house. So you would say you quite prefer the physical metal as like a baseline, and then any that you think, this is my wiggle room, my buffer, that's what you hold in ETFs, funds, similar to how people trade on the share market. You hold it there, and then you're like, okay, this is the stuff that I can sell when I need to.
Correct. And from a tax point of view, more efficient as well. But also, again, just going back to like what are you trying to do? What is your investment thesis, and how deep do you go when you develop that thesis? I have gone and I go continually very deep in terms of understanding why I'm holding precious metals.
Yeah.
And I don't want to scare too many people too quick. That's a different kind of spice. It is very important in my view that you have multiple forms of money and that you don't trust in third parties exclusively with all of your investments. That it's great when the world is working fine, but you're investing in precious metals. Why? Well, partly because the world might not go well. Well, what happens when a world doesn't go well? Well, financial institutions don't necessarily continue on when there's a global reordering of who the superpowers are and what the financial system looks like. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you want to hold it directly as you can. And that's why even if you are looking at storage facilities, you need to look at ones where you can access it yourself autonomously without power. And again, it gets quite extreme, right? As you can tell, but this is kind of where you need to go. Well, what would that world look like when I need to use silver, not as an investment to get wealthy, but when I need to use silver as a medium of exchange, as a form of money, which it has been used for 5,000 years or more? Are we really that narrow-minded to think that the world that we live in today will be the world that will exist tomorrow? But we're talking about maybe 100 years since we've been soaked in technology and had a life like we live right now. More recently, it's been like this, but we have this recency bias, right? We need to take a much longer time view on history. And in New Zealand, especially, we need to take a much more global perspective to actually understand that whatever happens out there can happen here. And you need to have a plan. It's not just about number go up on your brokerage platform or on your account. It's about how close you are to your form of money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Like you say, why are you investing in this in the first place? And if that's the reason you're investing, then hold the investment in a way that makes sense for those goals. You must have an interesting sort of point of view as someone who you invest in it yourself. Obviously, you also advise a lot of people who invest in it. So you must get ringside seats sometimes to some interesting decisions. What are some of the worst mistakes you've seen be made in this area, and how can we avoid them?
The best example I can give is my own, which is when I first started getting into silver, which was probably around 2013, 2014. And I didn't hold the physical at the time, and I didn't hold any ETFs. But what I did do was I set up an account on a trading platform. And I was trading contracts for difference, or CFDs. So these are financial derivatives or financial products, which allow you to receive a financial benefit based on the direction of travel of price within a short period of time. So I put some money into my trading account. We were going as a family to Fiji for a trip. And I thought, yep, I know exactly what's going to happen with the price of silver. I've been watching this for weeks now. I've seen it go down. I've seen it go up every Friday. Cool. I know exactly what's going to happen. So on Friday, right before we jump on the plane, entered in this 50x leverage trade on silver. I put down pretty much all of my account on that. I think it was like $2,000 or $3,000. But if it was going to win, it would pay for more than our trip to Fiji. That's for sure.
I'm already feeling like the anxiety butterflies build.
Yeah. That's right. So you know how this ends, right? So by the time we landed, it was all gone. My position was closed out. My account got wiped out.
Literally by the time the flight was over. It's not that long of a flight.
It doesn't need to be. It could be in minutes with 50x leverage, right? Or seconds. So yeah, I was completely wiped out. So that was a mistake. My mistake, what I learned was you do not trade things that are volatile with leverage, especially overnight or on a trip where you can't actually get the internet. Back then you couldn't. So that's kind of like the best mistake.
So if you're going to do that now, make sure the plane has Wi-Fi.
Ideally, or just don't even do it, to be honest, really. Don't even do it. Like, I think there's so much volatility and change in the world that you don't need to amplify it.
Yeah.
You know, leverage works great with property because property is kind of a slower moving beast. But when things move really quickly, you can actually just take that pure asset alone and just take it alone as it is. Take it neat. That works fine.
you've given, like, God, I'm just going to have to, like, take a deep breath or something. Because just even that story, I'm like, God, you and I have such different risk tolerances. I'm just like, I don't know if that's risk tolerance, that Francis.
That's just stupidity. That was
pure hubris.
Let me give myself some credit. That was education. That was my education. Yeah. I'm much smarter now, hopefully.
You gave yourself a really good lesson there.
Yeah.
I always like to think of myself as a sort of conservative, aggressive investor. You know? Yeah. Like,
I think last time I called you the passive aggressive investor, right?
I'll take that. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I should have that as the tagline on the pod. But yeah, it's like I like the tried, true, proven, quite easy, quite lazy strategies, but I'll go really aggressive with them. And then here you are, you like lay out some of your strategies, or whenever we talk crypto, I'm just like,
nah.
Good for thee, not for me, not for me at all.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Let's hit a little bit on gold as well, because same, same, but different, right? Like, yes, precious metals. And yes, often similar reasons for investing in, but also they do, there's similarities and differences, right? Can you walk us through some of them?
Yeah, definitely. So gold, massive fan in gold as well, right? So I think generally my portfolio is 50-50 between gold allocation and silver at the moment. The thing with gold is that, yeah, that's an alternative form of money. It's been used as a form of money, and it's even supported the financial system up until 1971. You could take a US dollar and trade it for some gold. But generally speaking, gold for the bakery, silver for the bread.
Okay.
So gold will be a more of a stable version of wealth storage. Silver is probably more of a smaller denomination, something that you can use for currency, but it can be more volatile. What drives the gold price is probably more geopolitical uncertainty, fears of global resets, a flight to safe haven. What drives silver is some of that as well, because silver is kind of like a cousin of gold. Silver is mined usually as a byproduct of gold extraction. And so there's that going on. But silver also has a lot of industrial applications, which gives it a unique, I guess, quality right now, I think, when I reflect on where the world is at right now, where it could go bad, it could go good. We're heading into a world where we might have more actual hot wars. There's a lot of silver on the tip of cruise missiles. A lot of silver. There's a lot of silver used in electronic components, solar panels, EVs, a lot of circuitry. We'll use silver for its conductivity. So if we have a world that gets a lot darker, silver and gold, great. If we have a world that has like a really good rebound after a period of uncertainty, silver. And so especially the types of technology that may excel in the next little while, it all speaks to silver. Then you layer on what China is doing with reclassifying it as a strategic reserve. Also the US. Then you kind of think, well, where is this going to go with the central banks who have been hoarding gold crazy, like crazy over the last almost decade, quietly behind the scenes? You got a lot of this going on, which is increasing the demand, and it's a scarce resource. It's not finite, like Bitcoin is. It's not finite at all. There's still new supply being pulled out of the ground, and eventually, as the price gets higher and higher, there's justification to dig deeper, effectively, for these metals because there's financial incentive to do so. So there is this kind of natural supply and demand mechanism which will equalize over a long enough time frame. But as a store of wealth, awesome, long-term. The best thing to do is to kind of take a pretty holistic view and allocate to both, especially during times like we're in right now. But the more you understand about each of those assets, the more you might choose to kind of weight it a little bit differently.
Interesting. Okay. And you mentioned Bitcoin as well. And that's an interesting one to me because it's been called digital gold. And I've always thought like, it's an interesting comparison because I both agree and disagree with that assessment.
Yeah. Well, can you explain it to me? Yeah.
Well, like, as you say, it's seen as Bitcoin specifically is finite, arguably, as you point out, more finite than the precious metals themselves.
That's absolutely finite. Yeah.
Right. And yet, the gold and the silver, again, as you've already pointed out, they have applications. They are used in things, medicine, tech, weapons. Hadn't really thought about the weapons before, but yeah, Totally.
You should.
Yeah, it's a valid point. And Bitcoin, the crypto bros are going to disagree with me. You may disagree with me. I wouldn't call you a crypto bro, but you're into crypto. I still don't see it being used properly in daily life. I think it could, but it hasn't happened yet. And so I'm still not at that point yet where it's past being sort of that speculative asset where people are buying it for what they think it could do in the future. Do you know what I mean? So I find it really, really interesting. And I find it really interesting that at a time like this, where we're seeing gold and silver prices surge and people are flocking there, that Bitcoin, which has been compared so often to the precious metals, is falling.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. Like last year, overall, while we reached all-time highs with Bitcoin in US dollars of about 126,000 in October, it actually finished the year, the calendar year, down a little bit with Bitcoin, while gold was up, I think it was like 65%. Silver was up, I think, around about 100, almost 150% last year.
Heaps.
I think some of it has to do with a narrative, in other words, an investment thesis, which slowly is evolving over time. We're starting to see it happen now where Bitcoin is being used as a type of base layer for a new type of financial system. So lending products where you can put your Bitcoin in a certain type of wallet and that lender will give you fiat currency back, New Zealand dollars, Australian dollars, US dollars, give them back. You then can spend that money tax-free because it's borrowed money, but you still can benefit from the price appreciation of the Bitcoin. So we're seeing that. We're seeing life insurance products now come out with that are, you pay the premiums in Bitcoin and you get paid out in Bitcoin as well.
That's interesting.
It is very interesting. And so you're seeing this kind of slow evolution where Bitcoin is seeping into the traditional financial system. And we're now seeing alternative replacements for fiat-based financial products that we can now interact with. I think that will continue to evolve, and we're going to start to see banks being formed, which are entirely run with Bitcoin as that base layer. And then eventually we might have network banks, and we eventually have a new financial system where Bitcoin is the base layer. Now, that's different to how Bitcoin started. Bitcoin was initially set up as a peer-to-peer electronic cash system, but it seems to be evolving into something slightly different. Or at the very least, it's evolving into a fuller definition of what money is, which is not just a medium of exchange, but it's a store of value. I think that's kind of what's happening right now. So this narrative is, or this evolution of the narrative is still kind of somewhat new. And a lot of people still view Bitcoin and crypto as the same thing. It's speculative and it's meant to be traded. It's a gimmick. It'll be here. It'll be gone tomorrow. And it's only there because interest rates are low or because we have a high risk appetite. My view is that that will very quickly shift to Bitcoin is a safe haven. And I kind of see it happening after we go through the other side, or we get to the other side of whatever is driving the precious metals explosion. I think we're going to see a rotation back into Bitcoin. That's is one of my theories. I can't be 100% confident that it's true, but I kind of see Bitcoin catching quite a strong bid off the back of people who've made a lot of money with precious metals.
Well, if all of our crystal balls worked perfectly, we wouldn't be here chatting.
Exactly.
We'd be in the Maldives sunning ourselves.
Exactly. Yes.
With our Mega Millions.
Alberino and chill.
But yeah. I do like that that perspective on it. I think there's something in that. I mean, so you would say, because of course Bitcoin down a bit at the moment, you think it'll bounce back up?
Over a long enough time frame, I think not only it'll bounce a little bit up, it will be effectively worth infinity in our current currency that we use. Because I believe that we're going to see the death of the current financial system over a long enough time frame.
Now, how long a time frame are you thinking?
Within my lifespan, which is shorter than yours. So,
yeah, hey, I could have really unhealthy habits.
Who knows?
You never know.
Yeah.
But are we thinking decades?
Within decades, absolutely. All I can say is that it's Bitcoin and precious metals are worth infinity. Even houses are worth infinity relative to the currency that we use today. And so the strategy, and this requires a lot of kind of thinking, let's put it mildly, that the strategy is to actually make hay while the sun shines, is to use debt very carefully and thoughtfully, allocate very carefully and thoughtfully to these debasement trade assets, knowing that what you're really doing is you're benefiting financially from the death of the dollar more so than the success of the asset that you're putting it into.
So if we go back to what we were talking about right at the beginning, where we were saying sort of that loss of trust and the look of alternative assets, when you're looking at these things and you're saying, okay, it all seems quite topsy-turvy and I don't know what's coming in the future, but it doesn't look great out there. It's not feeling super nice. It's quite interesting that the two that come up is the physical precious metals. This has been something that people have used as value for thousands of years. And if it all really goes bad, then, you know, the feudal hanging over a chip of something shiny tends to work. And then the other side of it being the digital asset of it all might totally change, it all might be totally different, but I think this is where the world is heading and the next step and a new form of money. They're two very different things. Do you think in that future they would coexist?
We don't know what the future is going to hold. It will either be a future which is very similar to the past, like distant past, right?
Really hope there's still hot showers. Like, just putting that out there, even if it all falls apart, please, can we still have hot showers?
If we can have fire, it'll be great, right?
Yeah, okay, great.
Or we have a future which is very digital, right? Now, both futures could be dystopian or utopian. They could be centralized or decentralized. It could be collectivist or individualist. Choose your poison. But they could be analog or digital. And so if you're bringing your wealth with you to the future, which remember, that's what investing is. You're bringing your wealth into the future to fund a future life. And so if you're not thinking about what that future actually looks like, you're only doing half the job. You're funding your future life with past techniques and past forms of money.
Yeah.
So why not update the operating system here a little bit? Why not actually update the tools that you're going to use? And so sometimes that update means using really old things like precious metals and using really new things like Bitcoin. And that's kind of how I think about it, is that I'm having a diversified approach to a very uncertain future.
Where does the share market fit in all that? Just total sidebar on this, but I mean, if we're thinking a lot of people, that's sort of their main growth investment, or at least for this audience, a lot of people feel locked out of property. Where does that fit?
For me personally, it fits quite predominant. Like my goal, my target allocation within my non-property investments is 80% traditional, 80% mainstream, which consists of the US share market, the rest of the world, emerging markets, and Australasia. I know it's boring, but there is...
Well, it works.
Yeah, it works. And there is, you know, some design within that to broadly connect to the debasement trade theme. But there's also, you know, I'm investing in companies that do and make things. It's not that complicated. And so my view has been, when I set up my portfolio, that the future will be 80%. There's an 80% chance it'll be like the past, just faster and more better. To use really bad language.
More betterer.
But there's a 20% chance that it'll be either a dystopian digital or an analog utopian. I don't know, but it'll be 20% chance different. Therefore, 80% of my portfolio is going to be mainstream. 20% of my portfolio is going to be alternative. So yeah, no, there's definitely a place for the share market. Absolutely. But even that is going to go through a significant transformation. My belief, though, is that if that goes through such a transformation that the custodians fail, because of so much volatility, people trying to get out, whatever. The currency fails. There's a sovereign debt collapse or a currency reset of some sort. It I don't want to say it doesn't matter. Of course it matters. But that very small allocation that I have, relatively speaking, of say 20% in an ideal world, that's going to be worth so much that it doesn't matter. I don't want to be too dogmatic. I want to be too certain that I know what the future holds.
Yeah.
And so I still have to do what's best practice. And this is exactly what I would say to any of my clients as well, is that we're going to create a portfolio that is best practice. However, like every single model portfolio that I would recommend will include an allocation to Bitcoin and gold. And the reason why is that nobody really knows what the future is. However, the form of diversification that we have historically used is really narrow diversification. Like allocating geographically or diversifying geographically, diversifying within different sectors, yeah, it's kind of diversified, but it all has to go through the funnel of the dollar system. That's not diversified at all. You should have another level of diversification where you're diversifying the denominator. You're diversifying the currency itself. So it's taking the best of the old, but you're fusing it with the future as we know it today.
Yeah.
Which will change, of course. But as we know it today, we kind of have to be a little bit more more cleverer, to use the good English again.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just do that. What's the old thing? It's really making me think of that saying, strong opinions loosely held.
Fantastic. And also just the whole concept of the Overton window, which you actually introduced me to that concept a long time ago. And it's true. So over time, I've been trying to expand my own Overton window. What are the set of acceptable ideas and how can we push that out a little bit? And it does involve having really strong opinions, but holding them very loosely. Or in my view, my language, you know, understanding extremist views without being too concerned that you're going to become an extremist yourself. It's hard to do. We really struggle to focus on two things at once. But you kind of have to. And I think, oh, well, if you want to grow as an investor.
Or even just a person. I feel like it's always useful to take in new ideas and to trust yourself and your own instincts that you can take in lots of interesting ideas and then potentially discard 80% of them. That's fine. But you take in all of the possible information and then say, right, now what if this is useful to me, you know? And to put yourself in that headspace of, okay, I think this might happen. I would like this to happen. And how do I shape my investing strategy with both of those things true at the same time? I think we can do that.
We can, but it is hard. Take Donald Trump as a great example, right? When he was elected, there was a certain cohort of people that were really excited and optimistic about the future. There was a certain cohort that were really pessimistic and really negative about the future. Can those two headspaces exist in your mind? And if they can't, there's some work to do, right? I know that's hard, but that's kind of like the exercise that you need to be forcing yourself to go into, because there have been situations where being dogmatic around some sort of worldview to do with whatever your political bias is has led to financial harm, because it led to a conclusion which wasn't necessarily true. You can't be dogmatic about your worldview. You can't, because the world will be whatever it will be. So we can't invest according to the world that we want to exist, contrary to what a lot of supporters of ESG type investing suggest. You actually have to invest, if you want to get wealthy, according to a world that will actually be. And that's subtle, but that's where the work needs to get done, in my view. If it's your money and it's your decisions that you're making, my view is that you should really take that job seriously as the fund manager in your household. If you're trying to make your family wealthy in the future, you're going to be judging yourself in the future as the quality of decisions that you made today. And the points of view that you held today will be under scrutiny tomorrow. So you better be really good eventually at holding these two competing worldviews.
I love this. Conversations like this always give me so much food for thought, and I have to try and like keep myself on track of what we're talking about, because we could go for 3 hours here.
Let's do it.
Diving down all these rabbit holes. We'll have to bring you back and talk about some of these. Look, if someone is listening to this and they're thinking, I do think I want to have a go on gold or silver. Not sure where to start. Where should they start to see if it A, fits their goals, and B, maybe have a little dabble, start to dip a toe in the water without getting their face ripped off?
Yeah, good. Let's not lose faces, right?
Let's not lose faces.
I would just start by choosing an allocation model. So go, right, well, for me personally, I did that 80-20. 80% is going to be mainstream, 20% is going to be alternative. Okay, so what's in that 20%? For me, it was Bitcoin, gold, and silver. Now, those percentages should be personal and should be just whatever you decide is appropriate for you based on your level of conviction at that time, which should grow and will grow the more money you put into it. I'd love to say that now is a good time to get in, but I don't know. No one knows. There's a lot of theories. But I think if you have a long enough time frame, like if you were, say, 35, 40 years old and you're investing for 20, 25 years before you hit retirement, which is when you plan on spending the money, hypothetically, what does that world look like in 20 to 25 years? You'd be surprised at how little you need to put into these types of investments if that's your time frame. They're seasoning. They're not the main dish.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It's also, like you were saying before about, you know, you like to bring the spice. These investments are also a spice.
These are spicy.
You are not going to, I hope, unless you're doing some sort of social media challenge, take a spoonful of chili flakes and eat it. You know, that's not what we do. But like broccoli, which is your index funds, your whatever, sprinkle some chili on there.
Broccoli. I hate broccoli. I always call it cold soup. So an index fund in my mind is like a cold soup, which is just blended up leftovers from decades ago, right?
This is technically nutrition.
It's nutrition. It'll do the job. You know, you'll get compounding returns. It's great. That's one of the world. It's awesome. But it's boring as hell, isn't it? But that's kind of like, hey, welcome to life. You got to do those things that are boring as hell.
You need to have soup 5 days a week.
Yeah, that's right. And who knows? Maybe you'll find a whole group of people that all like soup and it's happy days, right? You found your place in the world.
You've moved to England, clearly.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Hey, look, Darcy, it's always such a delight chatting to you. If people want more from you, you have, and I totally recommend your channels. You have so many places where people can get more of your wisdom.
Yeah. NZ Investor or The Everyday Investor on YouTube or on Spotify for the audio one. Look for the NZ Everyday Investor. And those are great places just to hear more of this crazy if you're into that sort of thing. And then, yeah, as a financial advisor, I work with Radical Investment. I'm a shareholder in Radical Investment, and we're specialist KiwiSaver providers that allow you to invest in everything that we've talked about today within your KiwiSaver plan.
Love it. As we say, you're the guy who takes us right up to the line and hopefully not over the line.
Exactly. Thank you, Francis.
Thanks so much for coming on, Darcy. Now, if this is helpful to you, and of course, if you think it might help your friends level up their money too, first of all, hit subscribe and then send this episode on to a friend. We can all get better with money together. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.